Planning Commission meeting, January 4th, 2023.
Anything in surprise you just said?
They made the adjustments they needed to.
Good.
That really helped.
So they did listen.
Yeah, they. In my opinion, they've listened to everything we've wanted in that regard.
Wow.
We got about 5 minutes and then we'll start.
They're working on a new tramway, and a new railway. So I missed my exit to the airport. I'm going out to Vancouver. I mean, they've only seen those flashing yellow signs and lights and flaggers. Where do I go? Here and there? And by the time I figured out where I was going, I was already halfway across the Columbia River.
Oklahoma just passed their constitutional carry law, number 16.
Mike, we want to start roll call, please?
What do we do?
name and just say here.
Mike DeRussia here.
Rob Price here.
Renee Morgan here.
Steve Johnson here.
And noted for the record, Rex Stevens absent.
Sorry about that, everybody. It's a new year. Oh. All right. As I said, anyone wishing to discuss items not covered on this agenda are welcome to address the Planning Commission as a whole. Please state your name and address for the record. Each speaker will be given a maximum of 3 minutes. Speakers may not defame, intimidate, or use profanity or personal affronts. The Commission reserves the right to delay action until they have full information on the issue. Okay. Is there anything from the audience not on the agenda? No hands have been raised. Old business, Thomas, finding of facts?
Yes. Madam Chair, members of the Commission, members of the audience, we have a set of findings for you in regards to planning department file number 22-W008. There's a chair right here up front if you'd like. We would like, as a housekeeping item, there was a qualified party that reached out via directly to a Planning Commission member by phone. Commissioner Price, we need to declare that as ex parte contact. We also need you to confirm for the record if you're still able to proceed in a fair and objective manner.
Okay. I did get a phone call from somebody associated with the case, and I am declaring that, and I am fit to stand with the case because nothing officially was discussed on the case.
Thank you, Commissioner. Happy to answer any questions on the findings of fact.
It looked like everything was pretty well covered. I have no questions on those fact findings. Okay, so we have no questions on the finding of facts. Do I need to read that all off?
No. You can entertain a motion, Madam Chair.
Okay, I'll entertain a motion to receive findings of fact.
So moved.
Seconded.
Approve findings of fact for Planning Department file number 22-.
Sure, where is it? Oh, there we go. Okay. A motion to approve Winston Planning file number 22-W008 and the finding of facts.
So moved.
Second.
In favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, moving on to new business. Planning Commission discussion, legislative amendments.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the Commission, members of the audience. So we wanted to place this on the agenda. It is a new calendar year, and although we do have many city projects that we are cycling through, and we have elements of the code that are currently going through an update, there are other areas that we can't focus on that don't require an analysis or a study. These areas could range from accessory structure sizes to fence requirements, those types of things. And I'm glad that we have a robust audience today, because maybe there could be a good discussion in that regard. So the Planning Department, Community Development, and Planning Commission, running in concert with that, we want to look for ways to cycle through legislative amendments every year. Last year, we had a number of them that the Planning Commission finished, and they were fully adopted through council. So just I wanted to put a plug in on the agenda here so that we had a chance to talk about it. I know that all of you have read the Winston Municipal Code, the land use area, in a robust fashion. It's just a riveting read. I understand that. So if there are ideas based on your experience of looking at the code, we, as city staff, at the next meeting probably, we are going to be presenting some of the particulars that we feel after doing an annual scrub of the ordinance that we feel could be constitute updates or merit updates.
Is this being, are we going to do this in conjunction with the updating of the code, or is this an additional factor that we have to work on?
Well, we have a housing needs analysis packet that's on the agenda here. We right. have a transportation system plan element that goes into the comp plan. And we have a potential stormwater area. All of those constitute a really large legislative amendment. And if we're going through the process, we should try to tackle as much as we can in that regard.
Okay.
Sometimes we break it up because of how big it is, and there's enough here to constitute a pretty significant change and update. But at the beginning of the calendar year, we always want to open the opportunity up for ideas on areas maybe you feel that merit updating.
Well, I know one thing, and we've kind of talked about it off and on a little bit before, the height of buildings, what we have now as the, I think it's 35 feet is in the code, is what building height could be.
We talked about going to a four-story.
And being able to go at least a three, if not a four-story, to help, you know, because if you're going to try and put in our limited land space housing that we're going to be needing over the next 20 years, I mean, I don't necessarily want to see a 20-story high-rise building, you know, and I don't think our topographically our land is set for that, but I think 35 feet is kind of limiting because that's really only a two-story building.
Yeah, and we have talked about this and discussed it in some fashion. And for some residential areas, it's 25 feet. And for others with more high density, it's 35 feet. And in commercial and industrial areas, it's 45 feet.
Can we unify that, or do we want to keep it separate like that?
It's typically staggered because of the type of development that's permitted or conditionally permitted. But the code is meant to, the local code is meant to adapt and cater to the population here and our needs, as versus another more like your metro area where they're going to allow no limitation on height because of the nature of the growth.
I mean, I think we definitely need a limitation, but I just think limiting to a two-story building, I think we need to look at definitely raising that up some.
Okay.
Could we put a restriction if we went, say, something to the effect of if we went 40 feet to only multifamily dwellings, such as apartment buildings or whatever, or and not single family structure?
Or look at where, what location it's
yeah.
in. Because, like, I live up in the hilly area, and there's places that a four-story building would be a bad idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the zones are also staggered. For the reasoning that a lot of the growth that happens that pencils out for developers in most cases is single family. We are seeing more apartment units and more need for multifamily units. But you'll notice from our housing needs analysis, 68% of the city is single family residential. Not to say that that has to be the case for the future. So by volition of the Planning Commission, if we need to move, if that's something we really need to look at, consolidating those efforts, or and the height, absolutely.
Would it be proper to maybe ask the audience and see how they feel about that, if they think it's something that we should look into, or if two stories is enough, or do you want to keep it at the commission?
The presiding authority can offer public testimony on anything at your discretion. If they want to add in testimony on this or on any changes they want to see in the code, this would be a good opportunity.
Do we have any construction people here, home builders? How do you guys feel as a whole if we were to raise the size of a home to 3 stories or and then 4 stories for multifamily dwellings like apartments? Do you think that that's would interfere like in a neighborhood like over by where the new co-op's going in, if that would be something that would be worth doing there, or do you think it should be limited to just certain areas? Or
yeah, not in my backyard.
You want to build a 3-story house?
You don't want us looking down on your back porch so we know when you're barbecuing? Come on.
4 stories, please. I'm with Mr. Stevens there.
I think it definitely.
Oh, you're one over? Okay.
One person at a time, please.
If you'd like to speak, please come up and say your name and address for the record. So
I just think it definitely depends on where it's located. I think if you're going to work over the code on that, I think there has to be a clear understanding of where and how it's used.
The current zoning designations throughout the city were factored in based on that kind of understanding that there are several things. This should be low-density residential for these reasons. And that is typically what happens when an urban growth boundary expansion takes place and we take in more property and we have to tack on an appropriate zoning designation. There's an analysis that says based on these reasons, this area over here should be RLA or this one should be high density. That's all informed by that HNA that we did. I apologize, housing needs analysis.
Now a 3-story dwelling in the 500-year floodplain probably wouldn't be approved, correct?
Well, 500 a year, there are no floodplain provisions for that. It's not until you get into the numbered A zone or 100 year that.
Okay, and so I was thinking that like down along the river, mm-hmm. and because the soil compaction there and stuff is one matter, and there's not a lot of rock there.
Are you talking to the south or southeast areas?
Yeah.
It'd be very difficult to grow in that direction anyway, because that's all floodway, which is the highest hazard. High flow frequency.
So anybody that wanted a big high house with big windows along the river would probably not be get a permit to build then down if they had property along that area.
It's problematic in any regard in the floodway to get because it takes a really rigorous HECRAS analysis from an engineer that has to be extrapolated to prove it won't cause a rise in the event of a flood, their development. So, I mean, even a house can be strenuous in the floodway.
Yeah.
So it adds an extra complexity in that regard if we're talking about that direction of the city.
Would we have the same problem except for the, like up Brockway, the Brockway development where it's mainly rock up there down just a few inches? I know that brings in a whole different series of problems, but would going higher there be problematic also?
We have quite a bit of land in our urban growth boundary and city limits to the northwest on where you're talking about, above Looking Glass, up in that area, the Safari Estates. The challenge up there turns into terrain and incline. And once you get above 12%, it's hard to meet any grades for streets, curbs, gutters, sewer systems, all those types of things.
And that's kind of why when we had the housing analysis done and they removed some of the land usage, the overlays that we had.
Yeah.
Because some of that was just the terrain was not feasible for building.
Right. So the entire Safari was taken out of consideration because of there were some areas that were exceeded 25%, which is an exorbitant amount. Anything above 12 should be scrutinized in that regard. And all tribal land was taken out. And that's on the agenda, and we could talk about it in a little more detail if you'd like. Any testimony from the audience at all?
I just have a question. Sorry. Right here. Terry Fink, 1100 Abraham Avenue. I have a question. I'm just really uninformed with all of this with the land use and things. What area would you be talking about as far as putting in three-story homes or residential or multifamily homes? Which area on there?
And that's kind of what we're questioning, right? Is there any areas that we have that are feasible for us to change the code from a 35-foot limit up? Because there's no point in trying to change a code that you can't. Then there's nowhere to put it.
If there's nowhere to put it, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, and that was my question.
That's us ignorant to asking.
Awesome. I'm in good company. Thank you.
Yeah, it's a good question. We appreciate that. All the properties in the city have a zoning designation, and there are height limitations in each zone. And if we're talking residential, they're staggered from low, medium to high density. And once you get into high density, it gets up to the 45-foot range, which, you know, gives you some. Doesn't quite get you into the, three-story or whatnot type of paradigm there. But so if we're talking about changing the requirement, we would be looking at zoning designations because that's where the rule applies.
Right.
So if you're thinking all low density residential going from 25 to 35 to allow more upward type developments, then that would be something to consider. Or if you want to look at a more high density, less of a restriction in that regard, it would be the decision of the commission.
I'm just thinking that if we went just low density single family dwellings, it would give people more options. You know, they could, instead of building out, they could build up if they wanted to save more of their property, you know, to whatever, plant an orchard or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they wouldn't necessarily have to build like a one-story ranch family house. They could go up two stories or three stories and save more of their land that way. That's why I was thinking that to kind of maybe limit it to low-density single-family dwellings. And, you know, and like you say, apartment buildings, we are going to be needing some of those in the future, multifamily dwellings. And the property that comes to mind is the Vandermark property. Mm-hmm. You know, that would be an ideal place if the ground situation, everything's fine, to put a three-story because everything's down below. They wouldn't be interfering with anybody's view. And they basically be up on their own.
Could you put something in there so once, like, if they, I don't know if it would be a waiver or an easement or something, where if the bottom story of the structure was parking?
Oh, like, you know, because over on Jorgens, I know there's a couple of places where you have, like, an apartment down below and two apartments up above, and then this part over here is underneath those is parking.
Are you talking for apartment units,
yeah,
Commissioner?
Yeah, where you just have the park like covered parking underneath, and then you just build the building on top of the parking structure.
So the parking requirement in multifamily is 1.5 parking spaces per dwelling unit. So if you have a 1 acre piece, for example, that's zoned high density, and a developer proposed a plan that was where they were utilizing the entirety of the property and there wasn't enough raw land to get that, then they could propose the bottom area to facilitate to parking.
That's what I was thinking. You could put it on a smaller lot because you could put the 0.5 under the apartments. Mm-hmm. And then the rest of it could be the rest, you know, make it up.
Yeah, the code doesn't speak towards how they are required to orchestrate the parking, just that they need to make sure to put in 1.5.
Well, I just mean if there was a situation where somebody had to build technically a three-story building, but it was two living stories and one parking story, could they get something where...
Does the code have to change, or
some kind of special dispensation for?
Well, you don't have
saying
to. Do,
you're using less land, so we'll give you the height.
Oh, I see. You know. Okay. There's an application process called a planned unit development. If they wanted to get more units, because there's a density, there's a square footage requirement on the property. You can get so many dwelling units per acre. So if they wanted to get more, the Planning Commission, and that's a Planning Commission process, you could award them up to 30% more units, and they would propose something like that.
Well, see, what I'm saying is it would actually be the same or less units. They're just, instead of, you know, we need our 1.5 parking spaces per unit, so we have to go over here, but they can't go over here. But if they go over here in a place where normally that wouldn't be allowed, if the bottom part is not a dwelling, could they get a special exemption to the height requirement in that place if they had a building that would, you know, be something compatible with the area?
That sounds like an engineer that's just trying to make a plan work. There wouldn't be a need to award any because they're making the plans work and maximizing their
dwellings. Well, I mean, if they were going to build in a place where, say, they could only have a 35-foot building,
mm-hmm.
but if they needed 40 for the parking structure, they could get an exemption.
Yeah, there's a variance process right now available, but the commission, you can, by your own volition, you can adopt a code provision to allow something to that effect. Have we seen that in recent years? Not in my tenure.
This is just a dumb thing I remember from when I was a kid, but in California, that was something they would do when they didn't have the land. They would just build a parking space underneath the building and then put the building on stilts.
Yep, and that's certainly something you can engineer to make it work. And in some jurisdictions, they'll give you bonuses, put it underneath, and we'll let you go higher.
Right.
In that regard. Yeah.
And that would be on a case by case basis,
yeah.
on a variance.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds like we need to set up some workshops to talk about these things.
Certainly.
On each individual.
Yep. There's a lot we could flesh out on that topic, but it was good to start the conversation here in our first meeting in the new year and start to think about how we can continue to enhance
the ordinance. Was there anything that came to your mind that you felt we should prioritize to look at?
Well, we have seen a number of requests come in the last couple of years for accessory structures. We have a limitation of 600 square feet. There are some areas of the city where, I mean, it merits that we have a number of existing old accessory structures that are 1,000 or 1,200. So we get into as city staff, we get into a tough conversation in regards to, here are the provisions today. Those structures may or may not be pre-existing, and they were built prior to when these rules were adopted. So the accessory structure provision really, I think, needs to be something that is looked at. I have a template together, and I'm going to present it to the commission probably at our next meeting with some ideas on some of the things that we can look at.
Is this a utility structure, or is this the quote-unquote mother-in-law cottage?
No, it's not an accessory dwelling unit. It's just an accessory structure. So it might be a detached garage. It might be a shop. It might be something that they want to build for their own personal use that would help. So right now the limitation is 600 square feet. It's not a, which is common in incorporated areas, but it's not a very big structure.
Yeah, like covered, but basically a covered foundation.
It could be anything.
Any covered foundation, really.
It could be anything detached that's not a dwelling that they want to build on there. So,
like a pole barn?
Could be that, yeah. That counts as an accessory structure.
No walls or anything?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, 600 square feet is not...
Yeah.
That's not
I've got more detached than I have housed.
It's just something to take a look at for the commission, because the point of preceding these changes is to make positive changes that reflect the demographic of your city.
Because I know I see a lot of people that, they've got their motorhome or their truck and camper, and then they have, they want to have their shop area available. You've got your she sheds and he sheds and Mm-hmm. And I definitely think that's something we need to look at, because I know 600 square feet is not very much. He just pointed out to me that's a 3-car garage.
Yeah, it gives you some space, but the precedent is that's all, right? So there's typically a request for a larger 800
now,
to 1,000.
Can we do? Can people ask for a variance on that, or is that set in stone?
They can, but the variances are tough, because essentially there is a variance avenue to facilitate the fact that there is a situation on the property that's not any fault of the property owner. So there is detrimental floodplain. There is a geohazard. There's incline to where it renders me incapable of using part of my... There's situations like that. But when you're asking for a variance, just for a variance, then that's just negating the rules.
Yeah.
I mean, it's better for the commission to consider raising the threshold.
That sounds right. Because like I said, I'm up on a hill, and if I didn't have as much concrete slab around my house, I'd have a flood in my house.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see where somebody would want more than 600 square feet.
Would that would fall under us drafting a new ordinance, or would it just be...
It would be changing the existing.
Changing the existing.
Yeah, which counts as a legislative amendment. Any changes in there for code provisions has to go through the full meal deal.
Wow.
Before we move on, because of your question, another one that's on the list is provisions, and this isn't in there at all, provisions to capture the long-term stay in RV units that are not in approved RV parks and their connection to our sanitary sewer system.
Okay.
So that's something that's also on the list. I'm talking about standalone lots, not RV parks.
Right.
So we've had several cases, one recently over on Peach Street, where there was a complaint put in that there was gray water being disposed in the system. It was investigated by compliance and the team, and it was determined that there was no merit to it. However, we have seen more and more cases of RV units or fifth wheels hooked into our sewer via their own independent line, or they got it hooked into a clean out or something like that. Unless it's an underground lateral, or unless you have an agreement in place to where you're living in your RV temporarily while you're constructing your home, and we have an agreement that once you get your home done, you'll disconnect, then the city in good conscience should not be in the business of allowing connections into our system. We're performing a flow analysis right now, and it undermines that effort. It essentially adds additional flows that we don't have any knowledge of, and that sort of thing. So there's some language in there that for the commission to consider.
Well, you know, we can make an ordinance or change an ordinance and put the wording in there, but it all comes down to enforcement.
Right.
You know, how do we have the capabilities to enforce it to where it would be worth putting it in, or
well, but you can't enforce it if it's not in the code.
Right, right.
So we can make a city policy that we can. There's some teeth there, but it's not by any means as robust as being able our compliance officer giving a citation because they're in violation of a code provision. Mm. So, anytime there's a code, and in answer to your question, Commissioner, anytime there's a code, we have a code compliance officer, and he runs. The compliance process. And so we would, if it's in there, we would be regulating it. And we do regulate it now, it's just...
There's just no teeth to it.
It's a very minor city policy.
Does anybody have any thoughts? If you do, come up and say your name, but what do you guys think about that? Do you think that's something we need to look at, or go ahead and come up here? Because we want to hear from you guys what you think, you know, because any changes we make or any of these amendments that we bring up, you guys are the ones that it affects. You know, we all live in the city too, but so.
Harry Bowden, 2 223 Northwest Hill Street. I'm in complete opposition to having apartment complexes put in there. All it's going to do is create more congestion with all these vehicles coming in and out. I am in favor of residential, two-story maximum, large plots in that area. That'll keep the congestion down, and it'll look a lot better there. I am in favor of that only. I can live with it. Thank you.
I understand the large lot. I have a large lot because I don't want a lot of people around me either. I understand that. And there are just some places that are more conducive to apartments than, you know, taking and setting a big, tall apartment building, a four-story apartment building on Abraham Street just would not. This wouldn't work.
And that's what everybody in here needs to realize is apartment complexes within the city of Winston can only go in certain areas. They can't go everywhere, just wherever somebody has a piece of property. They can't build an apartment complex there. So it wouldn't change, it would just change the height. It wouldn't increase where they can build them, you know, because we just, for one thing, we're running out of land in town, running out of buildable land. And the only way we've got to grow is west, because we're surrounded by a river. So that's one thing you need to keep in mind is it's only in certain properties that we can allow that. It's not everywhere. So.
Okay. Are we ready to move on to updating our grant programs? Update on grant programs.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the Commission, members of the audience. So there's a few items listed here. Some of them are ongoing. Some of the latter ones are pending. The first one being our transportation system plan. It's been 2 years. It's been a long grind, but our adoption package for that is almost done. We are projecting March.
Wow.
It will be done. As a caveat to that, we did also get approved for a Safe Routes to School project identification plan. That's a fancy grant name for ODOT giving us a grant for just looking at the deficiencies in the school areas. So I'm talking Thompson and McGovern. We also have the construction SRT, or Safe Routes to School. That's being reviewed. We don't know if we're going to get that or not. That's a $1.9 million grant, and we feel very good. Fingers crossed on that one. That would be a lot of the physical changes out there. This project identification grant that's been awarded that we will start, and by the way, a special thanks to Commissioner Johnson. He is the member on your commission that is representing the commission on the project management team for the SRT plan. So appreciate your participation in that and what you bring to the table in that regard. So what that's going to do is complement the transportation system plan on just the school elements. And what it'll do is it'll yield results to say, based on our analysis, we think you need more stop signs down on Thompson, or more crosswalks, or you need a light, something like that. It's going to put justification behind the school areas and help really augment that part of it. So we anticipate that plan being done right about the time that our TSP is ready to be adopted.
Does ODOT come into play with that when the high school's involved or not?
Well, they're the purse with this. The grant funding opportunity is through them.
Right, but Ben's, that's 42, that's their purview, right? We can't do anything to that.
Oh, yeah. The changes out there. So we previously got done with a project identification for SRT just associated with ODOT facilities. So that's already been looked at.
Right.
And there were some recommendations offered. ODOT doesn't yet know if they are going to do them, but the recommendations have been offered, and that was forwarded to council. It's a 6 or 7 page.
Has that been made public?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
If you don't realize what we're talking about. We're talking about the roundabout that was going that ODOT was looking at to put at Brockway and 42. That's what we're at, right on the other side of the high school for traffic flow and stuff. That's what they came up with, and we don't know if they're going to do it or not. And we don't have. I mean, you know, we've got input into it, but that's 42 is a state highway, and we don't control it. So
they are currently engineering a roundabout on Brockway and 42, and it is projected. It is in their plan. It's projected to be installed or be done 2025. That's the information. That's the update that we have, and we're happy to provide any. We don't have much on it. Not even engineering yet. So they're in the final stages of work. Anyway, our TSP, transportation system analysis, with the project identification plan are kind of right on the cusp there. So that'll be a big package to adopt. And we're hoping to do that at the same time as our housing needs analysis. So, any questions on that?
So when is that due in by? When do we have to have it in by?
Their contract is up June of this year. So they've got to have something to us that's done, a package ready to adopt prior to that.
Wow.
And we feel confident that they will, because our recent technical memos that we got out really bear that out. They're kind of on the finishing stages of that. The next one is our housing needs analysis. It's the same exact situation except for sooner. We should see we already have an adoption package. We should be all the way through adoption by March. I'm thinking that will be an independent legislative amendment process for DLCD to consider. And we've talked long and hard on that one, and it's been a really good process to cycle through. So appreciate the commission's work on that.
And once we get these all in and congealed together, we'll have a master plan, right?
You'll have an updated transportation element to the comp plan, and you'll have an updated residential housing projection for the next 20 years. Not for commercial or industrial.
Right.
That's what we're looking at next. The economic opportunities analysis, DLCD just told it, the Department of Land and Conservation Development, sorry about the acronyms, this past week, the state has told us that they are willing to add a recommendation in our behalf for the economic opportunities analysis.
Nice.
So if you can recall, the HNA was a $52,000 grant that they gave us. They also provided the consulting services. Phenomenal. The EOA, or the economic opportunities analysis, is around the same, and getting a recommendation from them is huge. And so if we could get on their short list for the biennium for that grant, then we've covered our residential needs. Now we need to look at our commercial and industrial needs for the next 20 years. And just for the benefit of the crowd, these plans are studies that tell us how much residential, commercial, and industrial land we're going to need in the city in the next 20 years. It's a 20-year supply, and it has to be updated every 10 years. Last time it was updated was 96, so we're not. I mean, that's why we're doing it. So that's going to give us an idea on how we should grow and in what manner. And it sets up if the city should do an urban growth management or boundary expansion, or how we should orchestrate those things. So the commission has been working tirelessly in city staff on trying to update these studies and programs. So just wanted to clarify it for the
all of these grants that we're talking about, that's money that we don't have to spend out of the city's general fund. That's, you know, and that saves you guys tax money that can be used for... One of the big things in Winston is the roads, you know. That's money that we don't have to take away from that we can just leave in there. So all of these grants we get benefit you guys. It stretches your tax dollars is what it does. Instead of paying $150 a year, just say you're getting $300 worth of use out of your taxes. So these, we try and get these as often as possible. because it helps us to use your money wisely.
The stormwater mapping grant.
Yeah, so this is a new, really good one. We just spoke with Deanna Wright, the State National Flood Insurance Program Coordinator, and there is grant funding available. The reason why we reached out is, and this is an antiquated map, but we're going to use it. Looking Glass Creek here. Right about here, all of our floodplain study stops. We don't know anything. We don't know where the floodway is. We don't know floodplain. There's just a lack of data. And seeing how our city's growing in the western area, we really need to have an idea on what flood zones are where.
Well, yeah. We're surrounded by so much water on so much of our land use that... I'm surprised it stops there. Is it just never done?
Yeah, so what happens, and a lot of these studies for the behavior of the flood took place as early as 78 by FEMA. They mapped the behavior of the flood, and they used a system called a HECRAS. It's basically a fancy name for surface water floodplain modeling. So they stop several areas in the county for whatever reason, because they didn't think development was going to take place past there. There was a lack of development. So it actually narrows down to what's called an approximate A zone. And you'll just see a blue area. And it's confusing because the blue represents the 100-year floodplain. So if you're not really tracking on that, but really there's a lack of data and we don't know where the floodplain or floodway is. In order to correct that issue, we need an engineer to come in and lay down engineering cross-sections every 200, 300 yards and map the whole thing and calculate friction coefficients and all kinds of fancy stuff that they do. And we need it modeled and extrapolated in the same, using the same system that FEMA uses to delineate the floodplain. And that's lots of money. So... we reached out to the state telling them, if we're going to grow in that direction and there's development, we need to know that. We need to have that information. You guys need to know that. We all do. So Deanna Wright is checking with the Corps of Engineers, and there is funding available for mapping projects. Not only is there funding available, but the Corps of Engineers, the state, they actually do the mapping for you. So it's 100% grant. It's a federal grant, and in my experience, there's usually things attached to that. She's given us the assurance that it's 100% grant-funded opportunity, and they will do the mapping for you. That'd be a huge thing. So we're waiting to hear back, but it'd be a really awesome opportunity to get that whole western area looked at.
Yeah, because we're very limited on where we can grow. You don't want to grow where... where you're going to be flooded out.
Now, would that go only to the city limits, or would it go clear out to the UGB?
It would terminate on the western side of the urban growth boundary.
On the western side, okay.
Yeah, on the western side. And just by way of reference, we've had one large subdivision, Looking Glass Creek Estates, and even into Phase 3, where it fronts to the north on that approximate A-zone area. So there's growth happening in this area, so we really need to take a look. So as part of our expansion package, one of the things that the state will typically say is, you've got a detrimental overlay there, the floodplain, and you don't even have it fully delineated. So that's why we're trying to get ahead of this, and just like in any other state department, we're begging for money and trying to get them to shake loose some money for us.
Sandra Cole, 372 Pintail. We're surrounded by water. We don't have room to grow. The only place we have room to grow is this western area that you're talking about now.
Yeah.
So the urban development and the industrial development plan that you have, and you have grant monies coming in for, where is that all going to go?
You go ahead and speak to that.
Yeah. The grant money is for the studies that are required in order to do the expansion. So that's kind of, we've been going down a list of different grant programs that go specifically towards different elements, towards studies for growth. So for example, this floodplain one, what it would do is it would give us the information on where the floodplain versus the floodway is, which makes a difference for you, for flood insurance, for lots of things. And that would then help us to orchestrate to the state that we can grow to the west because we know what all that looks like. We know what the river situation is, the creek. So that's one element to it. The housing needs is the other element. It tells us how many housing units we need. If we don't have a study that tells us we need X amount of housing units in the next 20 years, then the state's going to say, how do we know you need those?
Right, I understand that. But where are we going to put these things when we don't have limited growth opportunity? I mean, we don't have room. You already said we don't have room to expand.
And that's why we're doing these studies. It's because to get all the data in to show the state that we need more land than what we have.
And how would we get that?
By expanding the urban growth boundary.
Oh, okay.
And that would bring in people, you know, out past the scales here. It would bring people out past there. And out Looking Glass Road, out past the winery in that area, it would bring those into the urban growth. Because that's the way we're growing.
And that's the city.
No. So most of you probably live within our corporate limits, in the city limit. And you'll notice on your taxes, right? Mm-hmm. Some of you may live in the urban growth boundary because you pay county taxes, right? So there's a, if you look on our map, there's two lines. There's a red line, which is the corporate limits, and then there's a blue line that's further out. That's the area that you argue to the state that you're growing into in the next 20 years. And you need all these studies behind it in order to do that. Systematically, cities have to go through and expand their UGB or urban growth boundary. And then you have this 20-year supply of land, and you systematically incorporate it by annexation. That's been the process. It's not the most robust process, but it's the only one we have in the state, and it's protected with statutes. So if anyone's interested, go on our website. You can see the zoning map, and you can see those lines, and you can see where our urban growth boundary is. And you'll notice just exactly what we're talking about. To the north is green district and county jurisdiction. To the east is all floodway, and the southeast. To the south, it's floodway as well, and it's Dillard, and we're just never going to take Dillard in because we've been inheriting a lot of issues. So, and to the northwest, there's a lot of incline, a lot of hills, and the safari. So that western area, we're really limited on options, I mean, in terms of the growth. And so the state says, if you want to expand, you need to prove to us that you need that. So we have to throw all kinds of studies at them. And to get the studies, we have got to get grants. So that's what we're doing.
And what's the driver of the growth? Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Attila Ensa, 310 Northeast Darlene Street. What's the driver for expansion or growth? Is it to acquire more taxes?
No, it's population.
Oh, okay. So we're a desirable location to move to, is that what it is?
Well, if you want, and here's the thing too, if people moving in, businesses starting up, if a business wants to start up, they have to have a labor pool to draw from. Mm-hmm. To have a labor pool to draw from, you have to have population. To have, so it's kind of a chain reaction up to what, you have to have people to run a business. To run a business, you have to have people here, and it keeps building on. And so you've got to have land for people to build their homes on, to live in order to work at this place or that place.
Yeah, but they can come here from Roseburg to work here in Winston. Is that really valid?
It is.
It is?
In our experience, a lot of people move here to get away from Roseburg. Okay. And it's the same way with Sutherland, Myrtle Creek. They don't want to live in the... A lot of people are trying to get the country, trying to get out of town.
Well, how is this going to benefit the incorporated area that's neglected, like with the roads?
Well...
And what's the time period for that? If this is all like ladder logic, it's ladder logic, right?
These are all within a 20-year study. This is the projection for the next 20 years. Roseburg will be up what was it, almost 7,400 people by 2045.
Yeah, we are growing at a 1.3% average annual growth rate. That may not seem significant, but that actually adds quite a few to our city limits. There's two, if I may, Madam Chair, there's two parts to your question. Growth is growth, and people are allowed to move into the city. And because people are allowed to move into the city, but it exhausts all of our existing land resources, that forces us to then expand, which merits the... So it does add additional stress onto our infrastructure, those types of things. But when you add a more robust population, you also add additional tax revenue and those types of things. You add SDCs, or system development charges, and our budget, which now isn't nearly enough to cover everything, does grow in some fashion. But the base answer for the question is, if you have available land, then there are permitted uses to build on them, and it just by virtue of that, it causes growth, which forces us to...
Well, I understand moving forward for that. In a 20-year time frame, so you have to have the studies in order to piggyback and provide the elements necessary for the monies, right? So, but what's the plan for the rest of us here, Incorporated, to actually get the roads fixed? Is this the wrong commission or what?
No, but we operate on a budget just like you guys do at home. If we don't have the money, we can't spend it. We're not like the feds, you know, they just say, okay, we're going to spend $50 billion and take it out of the air. So if we don't have the money, we have to, that's why we look for expansion, why we look for building apartments, you know, getting more people in. It's so we can increase the budget and do these things. And you guys know as well as we do, things are... 3 times more expensive than they were 2 years ago. Your dollar is only worth, what, 64 cents right now? Something like that, I think I just seen. So, and we have to deal with that also.
The gentleman's question is, what are we going to do for the existing areas?
Well, the return on investment expansion from this 20 years out is not doing anything for me now, where I live, in the incorporated area, which is... shot, looks like.
Well, but it does. The more people we bring in, the more businesses we bring in, does help the people that live here. It increases the property value.
You got the numbers and how that's going to be allocated and all that kind of thing. Well, that's what you're working on.
Sure, yeah. What we can tell you, just because the Planning Commission, if I may, Madam Chair, Planning Commission, the taxation is going to elude because that's not their underlying purpose. But what I can tell you is... the taxation question can be very confusing. Number one, the streets funds that we get come from gas tax, which means people using our gas stations inside the city. That's it. The rest of your property tax goes to the schools, to the fire district, things that we voted for in the city via bonds. And so we only get a very finite amount to allocate to streets. Sewers, working on sewers, it comes from reserve funds for you paying your sewer bill. And it also comes from, we get every 2 years we get an ODOT grant that's $200,000. So for street funds, that line item is $264,000 that we have every year, which is...
one block?
How do you grow that pie?
We stretch it as far as we can.
Do I put more gas stations in town?
As a matter of fact, there is another one.
That's the only revenue source, right?
Yeah,
why don't we do some ordinances for that or whatever?
So those are governed by state statutes on how we're allowed to budget. So for example, when you
we got to go up to the state.
Maybe so, but when I get my paycheck, I can put it wherever I want. It goes in one pot. But the state says for cities, you have to put certain monies in specific areas, and you can only use them for specific things. And so, for example, for streets, the gas tax is the only money that we get, and we couple it with the sewer funds, and we do a street and sewer project. We get to do one every year, and little ones here or there. And so,
who's the liaison between us and whatever's going on up in the state?
Your state legislators.
Well,
And
there's the guy to go get.
And I would
I mean, if you want the money,
I would be more than happy to go.
Brand new this year.
Well, the other guy was around for a while. What was he doing?
I would be more than happy to go cry that song with you. Absolutely.
So we got somebody new, so we should work with them and push that agenda. I mean, I'm not getting paid to do this.
I like the general.
I assume, right?
And the legislature that we had, the legislator that has been elected for this area used to sit on this commission.
Well, then he's aware of the problems.
He is aware of the problem, and privately, I have talked to him, and he said anytime we want him to come down and talk to us, he will. And he'll do what he can, but he doesn't just represent us now. He represents Douglas County, parts of Coos, Curry, Jackson, Josephine County.
Well,
so,
I don't expect miracles, but I want to see movement forward instead of just rhetoric. I want to see it on paper.
And you have to
this
remember
is what
that,
we're doing.
That,
and then I've got to, point out responsibilities, duties, go back, make sure they're hit.
You have to remember where we live. We live in a conservative county, and we're ran by a left-leaning state. So, and they have the majority.
That's immaterial. If you're looking for solutions, you gotta get beyond that. Because we got solutions we gotta come up with. So.
We appreciate your very much.
I do understand. It's very frustrating for us.
But that can't be the answer that we're divided. It's not an answer. It's a statement of the condition we're in. It's not a solution. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
I'm just never going to get my brother fixed.
I like the gentleman. Hey, we do have two open seats on planning commission.
Sure, on planning commission.
I would love, Madam Chair, for this city to be riddled with street projects. Would absolutely love that. And if the Public Works Director was here, he would be saying the exact same thing. We do exactly what we can with what we have.
If any of you people really would seriously, we have two openings on the Planning Commission. Come up and sit with us for a year or two and see what we have to deal with. And then go back and sit in the audience. And then you'll understand why we've got flat heads. So, but there are, seriously, we do need two more planners. So come on out and join us. Help us solve the problems.
Okay, have we covered the grants then?
I think we have.
Is there any other business?
Did you cover the economic opportunities analysis?
Yeah, we did touch on that, but happy to answer any questions.
Do you want to touch on the one that's finalized that we're going to, in March, do you want to say any more on that?
No, I think we covered a lot of ground with that one. But again, happy to answer any questions.
Okay, for the good of the order. All right, 8 o'clock.